Okay, thank you. So I'm going to be addressing this question. Is that a motion to the process? And the answer I'm going to give is no. I'll at least allude to a philosophical argument for that. But as this is a science conference, I'm mainly going to try to give a scientific argument, so a mathematical argument, for no answer. So in terms of where this sort of fits in the whole kind of debate about evolution, I guess I'm saying that though none of us, I suppose, wants to go against mainstream scientific thought, certainly without a good reason, I think we can't go as far as many of our colleagues in biology or wherever, just saying that evolution is a fully physical process to be understood as reduced to physics and chemistry in its entirety, although obviously you can get a certain way by that. So I don't know exactly how far evolutionary creationists want to sort of go in, remaining in the mainstream, but I would suggest that's going too far. Okay, so before we go too far into this, we need to talk about what is physicalism, or an older word for it is materialism. Among philosophers now, materialism sounds kind of old-fashioned. Sounds like you're some kind of Newtonian physicist believing in a point of particle or something. So physicalism is kind of the updated term to take account of how physics has moved on since the days of Newton. You could summarize it as the view that everything is physical, entirely physical, nothing but the physical, and so on. It is the successor to this mechanical philosophy that I referred to, all boiled into a part in the 17th century, where everything is understood in terms of point particles and contact forces and things like that. To make my scientific argument later, I'm going to assume that if physicalism is true, then every possible state of the world can be described completely in the language of physics, maybe future physics, present physics, but it's sort of in mathematical terms. And the dynamics can be represented by a Markov chain. Hopefully people will know that, so I'll say a bit more about it later. So that the state of the system at one time kind of catches all the information that there is going on in the system in the past is sort of not relevant to future predictions. Now, physicalism is often connected to evolution. So here's a very common argument, Steven Pinker making the argument, but it goes back long before him. Paul Churchman made the same argument. For example, he says, thinking is a physical process. That's his conclusion, and his premise here is that the human brain is not exempt from evolution. Okay. Now, there's obviously more premises he's using, so we might sort of do the philosophical thing and write the argument in standard form and try and identify the missing premises. So he's assuming that the human brain is a product of evolution, and his conclusion is thinking is a physical process. He's obviously also assuming, I think, we have to assume that evolution itself is a purely physical process, as well as that a purely physical process would only have physical products, right? And also thinking is a brain process. So this is kind of a standard way that you can sort of connect the human mind and physicalist view of the human mind to evolutionary biology. This argument can be sort of turned on its head. If you like symbolic logic, you can think of it as this is a modus ponens type argument, but it can be turned into a modus tollens. And Thomas Nagel did this. Because if we have arguments that thinking is not a physical process, if we have maybe good evidence that thought has something about it that you can't understand in physical terms, then because the argument, I think, is valid, I didn't mention that, but I think the argument is valid, conclusion follows from the premises, then you'd have to reject one of the premises. And probably the weak link there, certainly for me, would be the second one. I think, we are products of evolution, and so thinking is a brain process, and the third premise seems obviously true. So you can make an argument using this to show that evolution is not a pure physical process. So this is the philosophical argument I referred to, and I'm not going to go into any detail, but just kind of refer to it. We're scientists here, waste too much time in philosophy. Why is thinking not a physical process? I mean, the arguments of people like Nagel and Frank Jackson, David Chalmers, Lawrence Bonjour, is that consciousness in particular cannot be understood physically. You kind of know all the physical details about what's going on in someone's brain when they're having a certain conscious experience, but that physical understanding of the brain wouldn't tell you what it's like to have that experience. That's a classic argument from Nagel and Chalmers. Also, free will. If the brain is a physical system, then physical systems are either deterministic or they're stochastic, and not, neither of those seems to be allow for self-determination. Free will requires. It's either predetermination or just non-determination. What philosophers call intentionality also doesn't seem to fit into that physicalist picture. You might know it as rational understanding. That is, chatbots, they talk and it might seem like they know what they're talking about, but we don't think they have intentionality. They don't actually understand the meanings of the words that they're producing. And finally, personal identity. The idea that there's a person is a continuing substance over time. So you're literally the same person you were 5 years ago. Again, physicalism doesn't seem to allow a place for that. So you can use any of these four things to argue, sort of do this modus tollens on this argument. So if this is false, then evolution's not a purely physical process. Got a quote here from Nagel. Yeah, from a recent book, Mind and Cosmos, 2012 or something. He makes that argument. He says he refers to consciousness and other phenomena that are not physically reducible. So if the mind is the product of evolution, as we believe, then it would follow that biology itself cannot be, and he means evolutionary biology, cannot be a pure physical science. All right, so that's the philosophical arguments. But now let's go to physics. So I'm going to argue that evolution can't be understood from a purely physical standpoint using a kind of mathematical argument. And I want to start with a couple of physicists here, Nigel Goldenfeld and Leo Padanoff. From a physical standpoint, you've got these simple physical laws, right? And the initial state of the universe wasn't supposed to be anything particularly complex either. So where did all the complexity come from? Now, they're thinking particularly about living organisms here, but not exclusively. There's other complex things like planes and automobiles and so on. So we might also ask why, if the laws of physics are photocopies of complex. As I understand it, there are two possible lines we can take on this. If you're going to take a physicalist standpoint, you've got sort of two options. And I'm going to argue that neither option is successful, so that physicalism has this dilemma. Here's this classic dilemma argument. You should hear clock is going. All right, now, so one answer you might have, why if the laws of physics are so simple, photocopy is so complex. You might say, look, simplicity of the laws is not really relevant here. Copies are complex because they have to do stuff like, copying text, collating the papers and stapling and folding and turning into a booklet, and so on. That's the function or set of functions that consumers demand, and the laws of physics have end up nothing to do with it, right? And you might say the same about living organisms. If an organism has to see and fly and metabolize food and all these kinds of things, then it just has to be complex and the laws of physics are not relevant. They're simplicity or otherwise. And the second answer is saying that, it seems, you might think that simple laws would only produce simple objects as the system evolves under the simple laws. It would only, simple things would only appear in the system. But that's not the case. Simple laws can produce very complex things. So that's you're going to look at these two answers. Now, I have given them names because I couldn't find, I've sort of given them names. I'm calling them mutualism and constructionism. At least the term constructionism I did get from Phil Anderson in a paper. Mutualism, I think, It's my invention. And it's not a great term because, you know, people are going to think of the neutral theory of evolution, you know, the fixation of the evolution, which is mutations and so on. But it's not really connected to that. Okay, this is a view about the laws of physics. And the question here is, and do the laws of physics themselves fundamentally favor what we might call functional arrangements of matter over non-functional ones? So functional means obviously that it does something, fulfills some purpose, not necessarily human purpose. I mean, we think that biology is filled with purposes. You know, there are certain things that the organism needs and that sort of promote its well-being and so on. That's the sense of function here. So mutualist views that we do see certainly a functional bias in evolution. I mean, evolution produces functional stuff. You know, you see that in the fossil record. You see endless solutions to problems that organisms face. You know, how do you eat from the top leaves of a tree? You know, develop a long neck or, you know, develop wings or something. And how do you see in the dark? Sonar or, you know, illumination systems. You know, you see functionality in the fossil record as well as in living organisms. But that functional bias, as I'm calling it, sort of functional preference, doesn't come from the laws of physics, but from specific biological conditions. You know, Darwinian conditions, maybe populations of self-reproducing organisms, and, you know, correlation between newly brought offspring and some of those inheritable traits. Okay, so constructionism gives the opposite answer. Says that the functional bias that you see in evolution does come at least mostly from the laws of physics. Right. So, you know, here are some fun. When I say favored or preferred or biased wisdom, I'm talking about structures like this that just sort of appear automatically, that they don't require very special conditions like cubic crystals. Wait a minute, that one is not preferred. There aren't any cubic planets. You get cubes sort of at the small scale, not at the large scale. You do see a lot of spherical things at the large scale in the heavens. And the question is whether we also get photocopiers as, snails, bats, and so forth, as things that the laws of physics prefer. Okay, so neutralism. I've got an analogy here with Lego blocks. I mean, if you have a bunch of Lego blocks, they don't sort of favor any particular structure. I mean, there you've just got a random pile. You can turn them into a car, into a house, or if you're really good, you can turn them into a snake. But the laws, the blocks don't have any inherent endogenous sort of disposition to, they don't attract each other to sort of go automatically into some particular configuration, the way that, you know, stars just automatically form and so forth. You know, see a lot of, sort of spiraling things in the universe. That's kind of that inherent preference. But mutualism says that there's no such inherent preference for functionality in the universe. Okay. And here's a couple of people who have been mutualists. One more famous than the other, Michael Polanyi on the left and on the right is Isaac Newton. I don't have the quote from Newton's Optics, but he makes a rather similar argument. This is a quote from Polanyi here. He sees that the structure of living things doesn't come from the laws. It comes from what he calls boundary conditions, which he sees as some sort of external constraint on the system that is applied to the system independently of the laws. And so he says the morphology of living things transcends the laws of physics and chemistry. I think that view is actually correct, although I'm not really going to argue for it here. Unfortunately, he doesn't have, as far as I can tell, any really good arguments for it in this famous paper from 1968. But I'm going to try and give some arguments for that. So constructionism, here are some sort of classic cases of fairly interesting and sort of complex things that do arise automatically or by self-organization, you might say. Snowflakes, mushroom clouds, and Binard cells, convection cells. And the idea of constructionism is there is a similar bias towards functionality in the universe, things like organisms. Okay, so here are some constructionists. Stephen Wolfram, he says the vast majority of the complexity we see in biological systems actually has its origin in the purely abstract fact that among randomly chosen programs, many give rise to complex behavior. Okay. Yes, okay, thanks. And Golden Fox, I did have a quote with Karen off here, but this is with biologist Carl Woese. He says that, you know, life comes about from, you know, some laws of non-equilibrium statistical physics. It sounds really good. It sounds complicated. Anyway, so, you know, just looking at Wolfram's arguments, I mean, he's particularly thinking about these rules of one-dimensional cellular automata here, which are kind of like toy physical systems that I've played with as well. Many of them have these kind of fractal or otherwise kind of regular repeating patterns to them, like rule 22, but others like rule 30 here are more sort of chaotic and sort of random looking and sort of more complex in their behavior. In both cases, you start just with a single black dot and it sort of generates the rest just using the rules. And you can even see some similarities between some patterns in living organisms, stripes of the zebra or this pattern on each shell, that resemble what you get from these cellular automata. Rule 30 is pretty similar to that. There's also, you know, funky chemical reactions here. So, you know, this is all sort of building the case. You can get sort of complexity out of simple laws. See that time is moving on here. That, you know, obviously to make this argument technically precise, you need to define what we mean by, you know, the degree to which the laws prefer or bias towards certain states. And this is why I'm using the formalism of Markov chains. And the relevant probability here is actually the stationary probability. It measures the sort of the long run percentage of time that the system spends in that state. I think in the interest of timing, we have to sort of skip this a little bit. But, you know, in Markov chains, you can sort of view the system as a set of states with these probability arrows, transition probabilities that tell you how likely it is to go. For example, in this case, if you're in state three, you're bound to end up in state one. But it's pretty clear that in this case, state one is sort of favored by the dynamics, that all the probability arrows go in that direction. And in this one, state two is strongly favored by the dynamics. It actually has a stationary probability of 0.9, but I think I'm going to skip those details to get to the punchline here. So constructionism, there's a bunch of arguments against it. I mean, it might just seem really bizarre to people at first. I mean, the whole concept of function, whether it's in biology or in human artifacts, just seems very foreign to physics. How would physics already have some sort of bias towards the nerve, you know, forming nervous systems or, you know, eyes or wings? It just seems crazy. Also, constructionism seems to render natural selection unnecessary. Natural selection was supposed to be the big idea from Darwin and Wallace to sort of create a physical process with a functional bias, as it were. Self-organization, people think, is sort of too limited or too rigid. To create organisms, you need something on top of that, something more creative. There doesn't seem to be much empirical evidence. You know, if we think that, you know, cool stuff really can come out of simple laws, we want to see some examples, and the examples are maybe a bit underwhelming. And then this is what I, a result I did some years ago that hasn't gotten much interest. But I think you can argue from a purely theoretical way, based on symmetries, certain kinds of symmetries in the laws of physics, that there are strict limitations on the kind of complexity you can get from starting a system like a Markov chain in a random initial state and just letting the laws run and seeing what you get. Constructionism seems to be at odds with natural selection. You get a lot of people arguing that, self-organization just isn't flexible enough. It's too much of a dead end to create organisms. The lack of empirical evidence. I mean, I don't know how, when you saw those examples of sort of self-organization, you thought, wow, it's just like a dung beetle. You know, it's more like more like wallpapers. And it's, you know, sort of interesting patterns. You know, you still look at the Mandelbrot set. It's very nice. But it's not a machine. It's not a photocopier or, you know, a bird. It looks like I won't really have time to explain my result, but that's maybe just a bit. The symmetries that I used to prove the result of the laws are LIM, local invariant, and Markov, so that there's no action at a distance. You know, the laws operate on local neighborhoods, and then global behavior emerges out of local behavior. That they're invariant and that they're Markov. That's a reference for my result. In a nutshell, what I show in the paper is that you can very easily, if you want to try and create that state on the left, something regular, I can show you a little app where I do that. It's very easy to create that result just by the law working away from the random initial state. But if you try and construct a LIM law that will produce, you know, Paley's watch here, according to the result of the paper, that would be impossible, because it's not basically the same thing over and over again. You know, only self-similar or periodic or repeating objects can be created by such a law. Now, you might think, well, neutralism is the way to go anyway. But, you know, it's very simple to show that if the laws of physics don't favor functionality, and also functional arrangements of matter are very rare in the space of all possible arrangements. I mean, if you just think about, you stick an animal in a blender, I mean, don't do this at home, just imagine a thought experiment. If you put an animal, you know, you put a frog in a blender and you rearrange the parts, you're very unlikely to create another living organism. You might just gonna end up with gunk because of the extreme rarity of functional arrangements. So if you combine the lack of functional bias in the laws with the extreme rarity in functional arrangements, then you're just not going to get any functional arrangements in any sort of reasonable period of time. So like waiting like contrary to Poincaré's time for this to happen. And you know, Gödel argued this. Although he didn't make the argument as explicit as I would have liked, I think that's what he's arguing. So the conclusion is that I think that biologists tend to assume a neutralist view of laws, although the view hasn't been formulated, so I can't say with certainty. But they sort of haven't noticed maybe that this entails that evolution cannot be a physical process. The constructionist view then is the only sort of reasonable option, but I think, you know, for the reasons shown, that it wouldn't work either. My conclusion then is evolution is a physical process.
We have 2 minutes for questions. Mark?
Yeah. So, it's one thing to talk about the laws having a bias towards complexity, right?
Yeah, and function.
Right. Complexity just arises because you need it to function. So, it's one thing for the laws to have a bias towards, you know, function and functionality.
Yeah.
But it's not exactly the same thing to talk about to ask whether current complex arrangements can be reducible to physics or to in a sense of it being kind of sufficiently explained, right? And it seemed like
explaining how it forms by physical laws is different from explaining how it's
whether the law itself has a bias toward a likelihood towards, you know, that we should expect functionality, right?
Yeah, I mean. You might think that you can understand the present operation of a physical organism by physics. I wouldn't think that either, but that's separate from the question of formation.
Seemed like at one point in your argument you needed to.
I was focusing on the formation, except with the Nagel-Jackson stuff earlier on. They're saying you couldn't even understand how free will would work in consciousness for a physical standpoint.
But even if the laws themselves don't have a bias towards functionality, it still might be possible to give a reductionist explanation of complex. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's true. They are separate questions. Yeah, I agree.
Quick question.
Yeah, so you leave us with two conclusions here that either of which seems to be kind of implausible in some sense.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you could set this before a non-believing physicist,
yeah,
or biologist,
mm-hmm,
and they'll carry on in unbelief. So it reminds me of Catherine Hayo's talk last night about, mm-hmm, you know, what actually would convince someone? Is it facts? Is it arguments? Like, how does someone step beyond these two implausible?
I mean, with the idea of dilemma arguments, you sort of put people on the spot and say, okay. So are you going to be a neutralist or a constructionist? So that kind of forces some sort of movement. I mean, they might have considered the problem before. I mean, if Goldenfeld were here, he'd say, yeah, I'm a constructionist. He's already kind of thought about it, but most people have it.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd be thinking, well, I guess I'm a neutralist, but then that immediately runs off a cliff. So that, I think, you know, caused discomfort. Yeah.
Do I have time for a question yet?
I think we're actually out of time.
Okay, I'll talk into it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I'm willing to.